Independent Footprint Show, where we talk about government, music, art, health, science, ufology, religion, metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth, and when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence of Prince, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this September the 17th on the West Coast. Now on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone, it's September the 18th. We'd like to welcome all those listening in on BlogTalkRadio.com around the world, whether it's September 17th for you or September 18th. We're heard virtually all over the planet and beyond, as we've mentioned many times. If you've been listening to the shows that we've done this week, or any of the shows, really, that we've been doing since January, we've tried to keep a pace or keep abreast of the things that have been going on in the world, and at the same time trying to show you where the illusions are. We've talked a lot about secrecy this week and who pulls the strings behind the scenes to control the world's governments, the banks, the pharmaceutical companies, the oil companies. Some of those people are participating at the top of the control or working hand in hand with a different agenda. On last night's show, we revealed some of Michael Tesserian's teachings and his thoughts on, based on many years of research, by the way, as to where the beings came from who are pulling the strings. And he asserts that it's from off planet, that they've been here for a long time, and that we've been here for a long time. And this sort of spiritual fencing, if you want to call it that, or swordsmanship, has been going on for thousands and thousands of years. And much like some insights that I've had over the past 6 months or so, even the past year, he mentions a time frame of 50,000 years ago. There was a really interesting event that occurred, and some beings fled from another, you could say another solar system, another planet, came here and made it look, in other words, they faked their arrival on another planet yet, but came here and hid. And the other planet was destroyed. So basically, for the past 50,000 years, these beings have been in mass hiding here in the earth, on the earth, and in various physical manifestations. We describe that process as shape-shifting. Many people have heard about shape-shifting before. Many people have seen others shape-shift, either with their eyes in person or on film or in photographs. And this isn't a game that we're playing to get you to buy into some science fiction. This is a very real phenomenon. If you heard Michael Tesserian's discourse, he treats it very seriously. And he talks about the fact that that these destructive systems that these beings operate are of a hive mentality. I've said that many times. He's agreeing with what I and many of my guests have said. In fact, humanity has somewhat of a hive mentality, but it's not really based on a real foundation. It's based on illusion. We've been cut off from the source, and we've suffered for that reason in not being in touch with our higher selves or in touch with the rest of the universe, flowing and communicating on a regular basis with the rest of the universe. When that happens, fear has no place in your reality. You won't buy into fear. You won't accept the illusions that are handed to us. Another more caustic word for illusion, when it comes from the government or from some authority figure, is the lies that they tell us. They say anything to save their skin. They say anything to keep their necks from being, or their throats from being slit. This used to happen several hundred years ago. They had all kinds of inquisitions, and people were beheaded for betraying the masses, for betraying the people. And we don't have to resort to those levels. In fact, all we have to do is realize that things are changing, and they're changing so rapidly right now that we're moving into an age where we are going to be able to naturally express ourselves in the true form, in the true nature of how we were originally created. The games will be over. The mind games, the mind control, the poisoning, the suppression of scientific advancement, any kind of invention. It doesn't even have to be scientific in nature. All of these things will freely flow through us. And so we're going to talk about that with tonight's guest, Jim Murray. I'm not going to bring him on just yet, though. We're going to listen to a piece of music. We have an upcoming guest next month who I worked with some 37 years ago. He's a bass player. His name is Jeff Berlin. He's going to come on Evident Footprints first week of October. And I want to give you a taste of his music. And this is going to kind of put you in an outside-the-box mood anyway. So we're going to listen to Jeff Berlin's trio from his album High Standards. This is the first track called Groovin' High.
The
Jeff Berlin from his new album, High Standards, and playing piano on that track, Groovin' High, written by Dizzy Gillespie, is none other than Richard Drexler, and on drums, Danny Gottlieb. By the way, in German, that means, Gottlieb means God love. Kind of ironic. Jeff is an absolute virtuoso. And virtuosity comes from holding virtues and demonstrating them, exercising them, and then putting them into practice. The concept of this album, which is quite unorthodox, is using the bass instrument as a solo, like you would a sax or a trumpet or a flute or a clarinet or could be a keyboardist or a guitar. But notice just three instruments, and yet they sound like six guys playing. And really, the purpose for playing that track, other than to let you hear how wonderful Jeff plays, is the fact that we've been talking about a collective cooperation in terms of consciousness. If the individual on his or herself becomes conscious, then the group becomes conscious just by being in the presence of the individuals that make up the group. And that's where our empowerment is. We talk a lot about power on Friday nights because scientist, inventor, author, lecturer Jim Murray is with us, and he has been patiently waiting in the wings. And I want to bring him on the show. and get his thoughts on what he just heard. He was listening over the phone, so he didn't hear it in stereo, but hopefully it wasn't distorted. Jim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Don. Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Could you hear that? just checking.
Well, actually, I heard it, but I don't know what it is. Every time you play music, it just doesn't come across too well. Strangely enough, what I could hear the best was sleigh bells.
You were hearing sleigh bells?
Well, yeah, I could hear, like, sleigh bells, and I don't know if that's really a part of the organization of the piece or whether it was a trick of the electronic media, but I just kept hearing sleigh bells. And yeah. I was going to ask you if, you know, that's an unusual combination if there are sleigh bells involved.
I think what you were hearing really is it's time to get a new phone and a new provider. I just have to say that you're hearing a very limited frequency spectrum on your phone. That's why it probably sounded like that. There are ride cymbals in there, so you were probably hearing the cymbals. So if they're sounding like sleigh bells, that tells you a little bit about the service. Anyway. Now, I've talked to you numerous times on the phone, and your phone is pretty clear. But when we have all this technology running at the same time here, and lots of people on the Internet, it can interfere. But hopefully it went over the air fine on the Internet anyway.
Well, it sounded intriguing, even if there weren't any sleigh bells. So.
Yeah. Well, Jeff is quite a musician. He's one of the best bass players in the world, if not the best bass player. And he can play any style of music. This was an album that he decided to focus on some jazz standards and really express his creativity, which is what I wanted to talk about tonight, because we can equate these things to music and other art forms. And I'm speaking about tapping into that higher power that we've been talking about on so many shows over the past, oh my goodness, what is it now, 8.5 months? Pretty much every week we've been staying on point and discussing issues and discussing how to overcome them or solve them. And I'm going to present something tonight that I think is going to open up a lot of interesting discourse between the two of us, if you're game for that.
I'm game for anything, Don. You should know that by now.
Okay. Well, let me just provide a very brief introduction. This is something that we talked about on some past shows. You and I, even to some extent, have discussed this. There was an archaeological find just before the turn of this new millennium in New Mexico. And it was a secret government project, a secret team of workers that have above average knowledge and intuition and understanding of things that come from other parts of the universe. They weren't prepared for what they found in this archaeological discovery, yet they put forth the effort to understand. And the message that came through was pretty interesting, because instead of getting all kinds of exotic technology, they got a simple understanding of the true nature of man and our purpose for being here and how the universe functions and how we fit into that function. Now, people are looking for answers because they see a lot of insanity, a lot of chaos going on in the world right now. And they're always probing for answers. They're asking, where are we going to find the leader, or who is that leader going to be? And it keeps coming back to the same answer. The same point is that we are each individually responsible for what occurs in our lives, and that we can create our lives. We can choose how we want our lives to be. we have been living for thousands and thousands of years under an oppressive system that tells us how we're to be, because they want us to act a certain way and do certain things for their benefit. And for the privilege for doing that is to continue your existence in this prison planet, if you want to call it that. So, or slave society. The answers to mankind moving to a higher vibration and actually learning and experiencing and contributing to the all of the universe in a positive way are six simple terms, which are called the six heart virtues. And I can tell you, in the song that we just heard, the six heart virtues were there in the music. Now, what are those? Appreciation, compassion, forgiveness, humility, understanding, and valor. Now, how some people see valor may be questionable, because we're shown an image of valor in movies, and we think, oh, that's the guy that just swings his sword or holds this monstrosity of an automatic machine gun and cuts everything down in his path, and that makes him valiant or her valiant. We sort of worship people who exhibit these unusual forms of devotion and courage. And yet we all have this ingrained in us. And the concept here, and this was learned from studying a group of 23 tablets that were on chambers, or we could say paintings. The rooms were painted with messages that basically unlocked codes that are in our DNA to open us up to be able to communicate with the Creator, to be able to connect with higher consciousness, and thus be able to connect with the answers to our problems. It's pretty simple. Everybody wants to be able to solve the problem, so you have to make an effort to incorporate qualities into your being, into your experience, so that these things become natural, and they happen through the heart. We've heard Christopher Holmes on the show, even with you on as a guest, Jim, say the same things. Would you like to comment on this before we continue?
On which, Don? On the remarks of Christopher Holmes or on the things you're saying?
Yeah, what I'm saying right now, and maybe even in relation to what Christopher said.
Well, actually, the thing that intrigues me the most is this archaeological find, because I'm certain that it's one of many such encampments, or whatever you want to call it, settlements would be a better word, here on the planet that are of celestial origin or off-world origin. It's amazing to me that they keep these things from the public so incredibly well. But the fact that there are instructions or, you know, glyphs of some sort which seem to be placed there for the sake of directing mankind toward a better destiny is a pretty wild suggestion. It kind of reminds me of that movie Stargate a little bit, where they had the teleportation channel for the wormhole, and the instructions on how to use it were encoded in some Egyptian tomb somewhere. I've heard rumors, you know, that there are things like that, not just for technology, but for spiritual advancement as well. And, of course, there was a lot of that came out of ancient Egypt, and it never made it to the consciousness of the general public, as you know. As a matter of fact, a lot of it was usurped by the very people that enslave us. And
yes,
they've used it for their own purposes, and from what I understand, a lot of it wound up in the Vatican archives as well. So the reason I'm touching on this, after all, you asked me for my opinion. I would love to know more about that and what the purpose of it is and how the story leaked out, because that's an important thing.
Yes, I covered this on another show. Now, let me say this, that it was determined on the basis of the decoding of the information. There was a digital disk that was left behind that they couldn't even operate in the beginning. They couldn't read it. And then once they began, once they figured out how to read it, then they had to decode it. And what came through was that they were convinced that this was a group of Earth beings from the future trying to steer us along a path away from a destructive path. In other words, they were seeing that the this planet right now and its inhabitants, mostly through the leadership of the secret governments and those behind the scenes that most don't know about, that there's this there's a foregone conclusion that the Earth is going to be destroyed because of the insanity that's going on and the corruption and the basically the heartless society. They're trying to turn everything into cyborgs, basically, that they're a combination of technology and biological material that can be programmed through the repeated assault of electronic weapons and electronic devices and other technologies and everything on a subliminal level to alter the consciousness, put the conscious representations of those things in front of us, and add a little fear vibration to it so that you cripple people or you paralyze people to the extent that they just remain in an everlasting state of fear and just do what they're told to do. Now, I know you didn't subscribe to that when you came here, and I didn't, and I know most of the listening audience didn't. Maybe even some of the jackbooted thugs out there listening didn't subscribe to what they're doing, but they think they have no other choice. So they're doing it, and they're doing it kind of mindlessly. Actually, they're not even doing it all that well, to tell you the truth. So to say that these people are from the future and that they're warning us, if they survived and the Earth was still here, the question then is how far in the future are they from? And why did they choose this time now to make this information available to at least a few? Well, as usual, they will secretly hoard the information because they don't want to empower the masses. Yet one of the program participants decided that it was important enough to tell the world about it. And he did so at great risk. He had to stay on the run, basically. Now, I don't know if he's alive currently. Suppose I could douse it and determine if that's true or not, but the point is, he went out of his way to inform us that there are some solutions, and they're pretty simple, but we need to work on them like we do anything else. You have to apply yourself to these things, and if you are your own boss and you're monitoring your progress, you'll see your life change in a very short amount of time. And it's empowering. That's the whole point, is to empower the person. So this knowledge would be withheld from mankind purely on the basis of its ability to empower us. It's contrary to what the minions of Satan have determined that they want to do. And taking into account what I was saying about Michael Tesserian's work and how it dovetails into many of the things that we talk about on the show, night after night for over 3 years now, the fact that this is occurring and a lot of people are ignorant of it, they're unaware of it, doesn't stop it from happening. So people can join in. People can finally discover what life is about and empower themselves. And when you're empowered, it means in every aspect of your life, whether you want to get into issues of health or issues of abundance or issues of creativity or issues of being able to freely express yourself without having negative consequences shoved in your face because somebody doesn't want the truth to be told. Okay, so this is an avenue to discovering the truth in all things in this dimension. Of course, there are many, many higher truths that we won't understand and learn about for eons. But we're not going to progress to that if we don't stop and really pay attention and take responsibility for what's happening. So in essence, this find really is about mankind's fate. It can be self-determined, or we can allow someone else to decide it for us. And I think most people would prefer to decide it for themselves and see the common factors that we all do it together. I hope I answered your question.
Well, you sort of answered my question, but the thing that you also did was channel my thinking into another area. I would love it if most people decided to take the reins and actually direct their own destiny or their own planetary fate or whatever you want to call it. But it seems to me that actually the majority of people don't do that. Now, are we seeing things in a different light, one to the other? Or are you just talking about a select group out of the many billions of people that reside here?
Well, if one person knows this and he shares it with another, and then they both share it with two others, and that process continues, in about 3 days, the whole world can know this and actually be applying it. Now, does that mean all the solutions are going to present themselves and resolve themselves at the same time, resolve the problems? No, but not doing anything about it certainly doesn't help anything. It only, except it helps contribute to the destructive capacity of what we're experiencing. When you understand who you are and you understand your true nature, there's nothing to be afraid of. Instantly, fear will evaporate on this planet. They can try as much as they want to make people fearful, but when a person is conscious about who they are and they have a true understanding of who they are, and they can put out these vibrations, again, appreciation, compassion, forgiveness, humility, understanding, and valor. There's nothing in there about fear. There's nothing in there about being egotistical or boastful or corrupt, destructive. These are all qualities of the heart, and it's our direct connection to the Creator and to the creation. It's the opposite of what we're experiencing now. Now, if somebody wants to choose American Idol or Dancing with the Stars over having this reality in their life every moment of the day and night, I will forgive them. Humbly, I will understand. I will tell them that I appreciate what they're saying. I will extend my compassion to them and even encourage their valor. But I can tell you that... Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say those are very high ideals, and very exciting. If in fact we can accomplish that, even with a limited group of people, it would be wonderful.
Yes. Let me share something that comes from James at the Wingmakers website. In fact, these people from the future called themselves Wingmakers, according to what was translated. And this is not confrontational. This is just taking responsibility and becoming aware and developing these qualities, which, again, are called the six heart virtues. He says, regardless of what significance we assign to our intellect or brain power, It is but one form of intelligence, and while it has an important place within our world, no doubt, it is not the primary intelligence of ourself. Our primary intelligence is empowered through our emotional mastery and our ability to conduct our life from the platform of the six heart virtues, which in turn unite us to the lighted realms of our intuition, which is our coherent connection to the universal field of information, referred to by physicists as the quantum vacuum. And then basically he takes these six virtues and he puts them at a point of two juxtaposed triangles. One is upright and the other is inverted. Each one has a connection to the center point of these two triangles, laid one over the other. And basically it makes a six-pointed star. So you have each one of these qualities attached to the points of the stars. In the center is the heart. It's as simple as laying it out like that. He goes on to say, there is a saying within the Lyricus teaching order, what one can express through their heart is gold to the iron of the mind. The gold in this case is the ability to express the six heart virtues in tandem, separately, or as an ensemble team to the various situation that life unveils. It is learning to modify your actions based on these six virtues and observing how they recalibrate your value system, revitalize your energy and creativity, and recoup your sense of balance and emotional poise. In doing this, you not only apply your emotional energies for the purpose of creating and maintaining a coherent personal state, but you also create a coherent field around you, a field that touches and intersects with others through the principles of quantum entanglement, resonance, coherence, and non-localities. The energies of our emotional field are real and interconnected in a vast assemblage of intention and information that is near boundless in its embrace. And then he goes into some details about the different emotions. But when you consider that, that's basically what I said. If you can recognize your own responsibility, make the choice to master that, you will affect that upon others. You will communicate that to others. That's the perfect example that the music that I played at the outset of the show really demonstrates, is that each individual took the responsibility to master his craft, and then they bring all of that together in a very technical way, but at the same time, they're so technically proficient that they can just operate automatically from the heart without even thinking about what they're doing from the technical viewpoint. Jeff Berlin played 16th notes through the whole piece of music, or eighth notes if you want to say they played at 240 beats a minute. That's twice march tempo from beginning to end. Extremely difficult to do. Yet they did it in a very light, non-offensive way. A lot of people don't like jazz, but then a lot of people don't like music at all, too. The point is this was free expression and free communication, unlimited, unfettered, if you will. And that's what we really have to strive for, is that we recognize our individuality, despite what the politicians say. Because forget about political correctness. Everything they do is wrong. They're the ones that need to practice political correctness. And that means keeping your oaths and doing the job that you're there to do as a servant, not as a taskmaster or as a dictator. Okay? So, comments.
Well, when you were talking, something really interesting did pop into my head, and it's very definitely related material, so I would like to comment on it.
Sure.
A lot of people while I still have emotions, they don't necessarily dwell on them in a special way that would reveal where they come from. And that might sound weird because, you know, everybody has feelings, but, you know, they usually, like if you talk about anger or hatred or concern or anxiety or love or any of those things, they always seem to associate that with their chest or their thoraxial region, you know, that type of thing. And it kind of stops right there. But the research of Wilhelm Reich was very interesting in that his claim, which I support 100%, is that we actually feel emotions through the muscles, through the musculature itself.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing about that is that when you are armored, which is a condition that no longer allows you to have certain feelings, the musculature becomes hard, and it remains that way chronically. Now, it's very, very difficult to reverse that situation once it has occurred in a person, and quite frankly, the old belief that psychoanalysis is the key to unraveling those embedded feelings is only partially correct. There needs to be a whole reorganization of the person's basic bioenergy in order to free up these solidified regions, or armoring, as Reich referred to them as.
Mm-hmm.
But where I'm going with this is something interesting. If a muscle is in constant use, like, for instance, if you got up in the morning and did nothing but run all day long, and then, you know, go to sleep and repeat the same thing day after day after day, it would be very difficult for there to be any tension in the muscles of your legs and possibly the lower abdomen, simply because of the fact that there's no opportunity for a neurosis to lock in under those conditions. We know this. But there's only one muscle in the body that is active continuously, and that's the heart.
I was going to say that.
And so when the heart gets armored, that's when you have a heart attack. That's when it's game over. So the neat thing about what I'm advancing towards is that it's very difficult for the heart to become armored, and so you have that one remaining channel, no matter how distorted the rest of your life may be, that it will allow you entry into the very attributes that you're talking about, and the slow unfurling of all the associated problems, if you're willing to actually make the effort to do these things. And, of course, everybody's argument is, well, we hear about all this interesting stuff, but there are no real directions, there are no teachers, there is no methodology in our society by which we can learn how to do these things. So, getting back to the question I asked you previously, I don't know how this information leaked out about this archaeological find, but if it did, then it's a very important thing, and people should attempt in some way, shape, or form to access the information and use it for their own benefit, to open up these channels and these higher consciousness levels. I think that's a real important and worthwhile pursuit.
Yes.
So I would like to know is where this information came from, in the sense of how did it leak out?
Well,
how can other people avail themselves of the knowledge?
Yeah, as I said, one of the participants in the government group that was assigned to work on these projects was actually overwhelmed by the massive amount of information that they got. Dr. Neruda was, or is his name, we'll say. We don't know his fate, but he felt that he had this obligation to the rest of the world to share this information, number one, so that people could embark upon fixing it, and fixing it through fixing themselves. We you know, you mentioned psychiatry. You know, I look at this simple fact that you have a mind fixing the mind. And this is not a mind issue per se. This is a spiritual issue. There's a limitless amount of information that's available to the entity, and for the entity to, you know, for lack of a better metaphor, let's say instead of using your mind, most people use their rear end. Okay? So if we're to identify the proper process or what really goes on, how this works, people can spend the rest of their life searching for where that gateway is. But we're sharing it with the audience right now, telling them that it's through the heart. Now, the technology that was discovered was intended to enlighten us in the sense of, and I don't mean this in an occultic way, I'm saying in terms of awakening us and casting the light on the darkness and exposing the lies and leading us to the truth so that we can use what works and quit the charades, quit the mind games, quit the mind control, quit the poisoning and the destruction and the murder, and just set about business, the business of life. This is called a life. It's not called a death. You know, death is merely the transition, but they have everyone's attention affixed on the end result, which is inevitable. But the true reality of what that is has not been taught to us either. So this information came out. It's a blessing that it came out. This link to this website, wingmakers.com, has been on my links page for 3 years. It's been there for everybody to see. I'm not chastising you if you were not there, Jim. But I do have a whole web page of some pretty interesting links where people can go and start researching some topics. I'm not saying whether or not you have to accept what you read, but you're going to see similarities as you discover the truth that's going to open up a permanent pathway to higher knowledge and higher consciousness. And with that, when you replace fear with knowledge, the fear has no place to reside. And so we can approach this in a very systematic way. There are no secrets as to how to do this, and yet by not doing it, I can guarantee you will fail. There, maybe it would be helpful even to expound a bit on another aspect of what James had to say in that regard, because he does address the issue of the expectancy that people have in the world today. He talks about three subtle desires. He says, now we come to the three subtle desires that stand behind nearly everything we work to achieve. Instant gratification, control, the next thing. These three subtle desires also influence our expectation in the field of spiritual development and growth, and it is for this reason that I shine the spotlight on them. The desire for instant gratification. There is a phrase from William Gibson, the future has already happened, it's just not very well distributed. This sentiment seems appropriate in a world where shortcuts are acclaimed by experts from every field of endeavor. Acceleration is the byword of the day, and the goal of this acceleration is to do everything faster in less time, to be more productive, to be a better employee, to be a better student, to be a better everything, and to do it or acquire it faster and easier. What's missing from this approach is the destination, or said another way, where is the acceleration taking you? To a fancier car, larger home, enlightenment, inexhaustible bank account, more prestigious position in life, better health, or simply a lifestyle of relative ease? Whatever the destination, the notion of instant gratification looms as the catalyst for its achievement. But what if the destination is emotional self-mastery? What are the signposts for acceleration in this case? What are the shortcuts, and how do we know we are accelerating, decelerating, or treading water and getting nowhere fast? Instant gratification assumes one fundamental thing. To every human endeavor, there is an elevator or staircase, and it is better to choose the elevator. Getting your destination or achieving your goal quickly is more important than assessing which destination or goal is best. It is precisely this need for acceleration of goal achievement that often causes one to take a miscalculated detour from assessing what destination or goals are most vital to the fulfillment of their purpose. Now, I can use this show as an example, Jim. If I came out the first show and just said everything I know, and back then I was doing three-hour shows. You well remember that.
I do.
We were up until Eastern time, 4 o'clock in the morning. And there were times we were so empowered by what we talked about and what we, you know, the truth that was coming out, that we could have gone another 3 hours. You remember that?
I do.
Okay. So putting it into motion and applying it, putting it into action with an intention. Of course, I didn't come out with every topic. I mean, I'm just using that as an example that everybody would suffer information overload. But a lot of this information is multidimensional. It's happening on other levels, whether you're aware of it or not. You're picking these things up subconsciously. You might remember something you heard on this show a year from now without having given it a second thought. Something will pop into your mind and say, I remember hearing this. Now I'm seeing it in action. Now I'm experiencing it. And you may have worked to get to that level, you see. Now, if everyone was doing that, would they be able to suppress inventions? Would they be able to hoodwink everybody into fictional stories about why we have war, or why somebody won an election, or why kids are suddenly smarter in school? Because the kids wouldn't have to go to school if we applied these principles in everyday life, kids wouldn't need to go to school. They would learn on their own, and they would be expressing themselves in the most natural way. That doesn't mean without order, because as they're growing and they're tuning in and becoming more conscious, they're going to be more aware of the others who are doing the same thing, you see? And that develops community and communication. Go ahead, Jim. I didn't mean to take all that time, but I wanted to make that.
That's quite all right. I mean, it is your show, but the things that you're discussing are very interesting. And of course, you have to realize, at least I, from my perspective, I believe that when you discuss these mechanisms and these instructions, it's going to depend completely on the level of development of the person who's listening as to how much sense it's going to make. It's the same old story of, you know, without a common experience, it's very difficult to teach somebody something, especially if it's subjective in nature. And the biggest problem here is turning something subjective into something that's objective, so that it can not only be shared, but it can be experienced on a more general basis. And that takes a great deal of discipline, information, exposure, teaching. I mean, there are just so many aspects to it that I find it very difficult that somebody could achieve it on their own, even if they had, you know, this full set of instructions that you were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, if just for sake of argument, if you took the word appreciation and you worked on that for a week, and then you took the word forgiveness and you worked on applying forgiveness, making forgiveness a part of your everyday, every experience reality, without forgetting the week that you spent on appreciation, now you empower yourself by allowing those two qualities to work simultaneously with you. Now, let's say you wanted to add humility. Let's say you're feeling, some part of you is feeling like, yeah, I have to be a little bit more humble. I have to be more tolerant of others and give them their due. I'm no better than anyone else. I may have more energy. You know, whatever your thoughts are, however you sort that out, you could have this done in 6 weeks. And then integrate the different aspects of each of these qualities as much as you can into everything that you do, everything that you intend and act out. So even to the person that doesn't really understand what we're talking about, if you can teach them to appreciate and focus on appreciating what they have, most people despise or hate what they have because somewhere in their being it's ingrained in them that they're not good enough and they don't have enough, and that somehow having makes them be a better person. And that's not necessarily true at all. But to simply be appreciative of what you do have opens the pathway to have more and still be appreciative without doing anything else to take it away from someone else, like the government does. You see what I'm saying? So
yeah,
I understand your point, but everyone can be taught these principles. It's not that far reaching. Go ahead.
No, I was just interested in finding a general mechanism for doing that exact thing. Because while the virtues are certainly worthwhile and should be practiced by everyone, I don't necessarily see where the connection is between what was discovered in this ancient settlement and the inability of most people to respond to such teachings. It would almost appear to me that there would have to be more let's call it sacred instructions or sacred information that has not yet made it into the public domain. And that those, in fact, are the very things required to teach us how to cope with these situations and how to open ourselves up despite the damage that we may have incurred by being so smothered in the system.
Yeah, if you take compassion and you have compassion for others, if you have compassion for yourself, you have now the capacity to have compassion for others. And that includes nature, all of nature. And so now you have a compassion for the earth, and you now are raising your vibration, and that becomes ever more empowering. These are things that raise the vibration, that raise the consciousness level. A person doesn't have to set out by saying, well, I think I'm going to just be more conscious, okay? So let me, today I'm going to enact understanding in everything I do. Well, you're starting out with some very confused individuals in one confused mass. I mean, it's chaotic what's going on. What you have to understand, and that's, we've already done the homework on that area, Jim, we've pointed out the illusions. We pointed out that what we're suffering, or what we feel we're suffering, or what has victimized us, if you want to use that framework of understanding as a starting point, we don't know who we really are. So we feel powerless to do anything. And putting our attention on these six virtues will open the pathway to understanding of who we are and to the understanding of what's been going on. And then all that remains is the solutions. And the solutions will be there. I'm providing one right now. Okay? For me to hold this information back from the listening audience to anyone that's looking for truth is selfish. Those that have discovered this, had Dr. Neruda not come forth and shared that information, we would still be talking about the same things. But here is a specific laid out principle that anyone can practice. And it makes a lot of sense. Makes all the sense in the world. What does anyone have to lose by applying it? Doesn't cost any money. They don't have to get they don't have to vote on it. They don't have to ask for permission to do it. In fact, you practice valor. The guy that comes and tells you that you need permission to do it, your valor will take care of that problem right away. And you'll know in your heart that you're making the right decisions, you see. We will all open our sacred connections. You use that word. You know, these are sacred virtues.
Well, because that's what I believe it is. I mean, stop and think about it. Who are you connecting to? I mean, that's self-defining.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say most, you know, the average individual is not connected with his or herself. Maybe emotionally, you know, they have feelings. They know, in a sense, what they want in life, but they don't see the path, which is really, you know, they're standing on it. They just need to move forward. They need to move. Now, if you were to apply any of these principles to what you do in the process of invention or studying the science that's out there and looking at it and trying to, let's say, address a problem that the world has and to come up with a solution, and you invent something, do you see any of these principles in your approach to connecting with the universe to be inspired?
Oh, I do. Well, first of all, I think the most paramount one is humility. I don't care how many PhDs you have. The fact of the matter is you don't know anything. And you need to remember that. Because, you know, every mind on this entire planet represents a minuscule drop in the bucket compared to the mind of the Almighty that created all this stuff. So no matter how much you learn, you really don't know anything. And if you keep yourself reminded of that fact and thereby curtail the tendency to elevate your ego, that in itself goes a very long way to preparing you for the reception of information from an outside source. The other thing, which is kind of like valor in a sense, is stick-to-itiveness. I have to laugh because so many people I've been involved with over the years have made comments like, one or two prototypes and we'll be in production, or I'm sure you'll have the information in a month or so. Actually, that was the attitude I had personally when I was 19 years old. I can still remember somebody asking me how long did I think it was going to take to crack the meaning of Tesla's research. And I said, about 6 months. Well, that was 42 years ago. So I was a little bit off. But the point is that stick-to-itiveness and intent and humility are certainly three things that are very, very important if you want to make progress along the lines of real inventing. And I must say that real inventing is not the kind of tinkering around that Thomas Edison did. It's a passive process by which you open yourself to the inspirations that can come to you from an outside source. After you have received something and you comprehend its meaning, that's when the work starts in this plane. But prior to that, it's a sort of a spiritual slash mental experience as a starting point. Otherwise, you're not really receiving something from a higher realm. And that's okay. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are two different ways to invent. You can just tinker around with something that already exists, no matter how it got here, and you can look for an improvement in it, or you can look for a variation on a particular theme. But the other aspect, which I value very highly, is when you literally make a request to the universe, please teach me how to do this. Please show me how to do whatever it is. And then you allow yourself to be open so that you can intercept the response. Mm-hmm. And then you work on the information that's embedded in that response.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned stick-to-itiveness. I would call that persistence. Now, you can apply that to each of these six virtues. In fact, it would be recommended to apply that to the virtues so that if you're expecting to get instant results because you've practiced compassion, do you understand the meaning of the word compassion? And do you understand that really we err in applying the meaning of the word compassion? It would be, your ability to sympathize or feel the emotions of someone who is suffering. There's nothing wrong with that as long as you don't fall into the emotion of suffering. Maybe the better way or the more advantageous way to approach compassion would be to understand and share the feelings of the other person. Now, instead of focusing on the negative, you look at it with the intent to provide a solution as well, you see. And then the act of understanding, what is that? we say, oh, yeah, I understand, but then the actions belie the understanding. Whether it's carrying out the process, which might be a formula or just a method for learning something, or just acting something out in a non-life-threatening way. And hopefully, appreciation can be applied to compassion, can be applied to understanding, or valor, or humility, or forgiveness. And appreciation makes something more valuable. You cause it to expand or enlarge. You create something greater, or you allow a natural process to become what it is in the most basic way without interfering in the process. All of that going through the heart has to impact the individual, whether it's to receive some unseen inspiration from the outer realms of the matrix that we're in, and connect with the universe and just have that information flow freely to you. And it's only going to be able to do it at the frequency you can handle. Otherwise, you would go insane. Which anyone trying to reach nirvana or samadhi, the higher goals of yoga are going to implode because they've basically downloaded too much information. Because the information will come when the pathway is open. It's always trying to get in. as we've talked about on those grids. So I just wanted to make that point that you could apply persistence or stick-to-itiveness to all of these virtues and the acquisition of them, as well as the exercising of them or the application.
Well, I agree with you. The other side of the coin is there, too, and it needs to be reckoned with. I think it was Thomas Aquinas that said that he spent years working on the virtue of humility. And when he found, when he thought that he actually had achieved that, he was proud that he was humble. And so, you know, it's a very difficult thing to keep your human side in check when you attempt to develop these virtues. It's not an easy thing.
Well, that usually is a reflection or an indicator of a preoccupation with the thoughts of others. You're too concerned, you know, the person that has to be proud of his or her humility is more concerned about how that looks in the eyes of others. You're missing out on the whole experience of being humble in that process. Being humble doesn't mean you have to be a wimp. You know, again, it leads to valor, and it leads to appreciation. And it leads to the act of forgiveness. And from that comes understanding. And same with compassion. You apply compassion to a problem, especially a people problem or a nature problem, and understanding comes with that. And with the understanding, you eliminate fear. And so you open up the door to valor. And the individual who is courageous can remain humble because they're not living from a state of lack of self-esteem or low self-esteem, but just the confidence that they're on the right path. To me, it all makes sense. And is this the only path or the only way to achieve enlightenment of that sort? No. But it is a simple process that certainly would improve the lives of billions of people right now on the planet, and at the same time probably effectuate the saving of the planet.
Well, that's a goal that we should all be cognizant of, because if the situation goes too far, I mean, if we lose Mother Earth, I don't care what faction of the elite you may be in, you're not going to do well. We definitely need our planet. We need our divine spaceship in order to persist as a species, and that really should be the number one goal, even before you concentrate on bettering yourself. I mean, the planet was in a pristine condition originally, and we don't really have to work very hard, or at least we didn't have to work very hard to achieve that. All we had to do was be cognizant of how it was and exert a little effort to maintain that beauty and that wonderful, pristine environment that we were gifted with. But we chose not to do that.
Yeah.
And so now it's a big task. But it is the most important task. I mean, if we lose our planet, where do you go? I think it's a far easier task to try and bring Mother Earth back to her previous condition than it would be to build some kind of a space ark and launch 6.5 billion people into the reaches of space in search of another world. It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, do you honestly think there's another world out there that has its own consciousness waiting for an experience just like the Earth is going through? You know, and I say that a bit in jest, because if we only understood these problems, we could fix those problems and we wouldn't have to be looking for that spaceship to take us there, you see. That wouldn't have to occur at all. And I think that's a universal truth, that whether we choose to deal with it or not. You see, building that ship and taking off is one thing in and of itself. It's an accomplishment. It's a feat. But then we run away from our responsibility, you see. And that's not there's still a price to be paid. That responsibility is still unpaid.
Oh, I agree with you. And if you take it a step further, human tendencies being what they are, if you did find another world that was the equivalent to our own, let's say, 500,000 years ago, how long would we take to destroy that place?
Oh, that's why I use that metaphor. Do you think there's a planet out there just, you know, it's rubbing its hands together, waiting for us to get there to destroy it as well? You know, there's a consciousness. If a plant knows that a murderer is in the line, like when you talked about the sensitivity and the recognition, the consciousness of plants to recognize people just by their own energy, then imagine what a whole planet feels. Imagine, is there any wonder why we have earthquakes and volcanoes outside of the artificial ones? You know, there are some natural ones occurring, and there are shifting of the tectonic plates occurring, and there are electromagnetic anomalies occurring all over the planet and in the ionosphere and the realms beyond. We're interfering with others' right to exist, you see, as a collective entity here on this planet. But most of the entity on this planet wants to be healthy and whole, and we've got a group of criminals that want to drag it down into an abyss and a muck of depravity and filth, psychic filth, you know, totally devoid of any spirit or totally devoid of anything that was created, you know, or a part of the original creation. They want to defile all of it. And they're doing a good job at it. So, you know, it may be too esoteric for some, but then again, those are not the people that are going to help solve the problems anyway. They'll make their vote on, they'll text message a vote for American Idol or Dancing with the Stars or whatever their favorite TV show is. And then one day they're going to wake up and there's not going to be any TV. How are these people going to function when that happens? You know, you can look at it that way. We
well,
don't have
I
it.
Mean,
yeah, go ahead.
There was a very long period of time on Earth when there was no TV, and the human race seemed to have survived very nicely. As a matter of fact, the invention of television has been misused horrendously, because it could have been a wonderful educational facility, but I think it's been used more for brainwashing and for controlling the masses than it has been for education. I mean, even now, if you look at TV, what the heck is on there? It seems like even when they have 300 channels available on these satellite arrangements, you know, there's nothing of substance to be found.
Just commercials.
Yeah, or worse. And that just seems to me to be a waste of technology, of time, of money, of effort. But on the other hand, look at the results of it. People flock to see that stuff. So I don't know. Is there a flaw in our basic nature, or is it just that the programming is very embedded?
Well, in one sentence, Jim, the whole world has been enslaved, and these diversions offer them a momentary attempt at fleeing from it, okay? Breaking out of the prison of slavery. And so it provides a psychological crutch for 90 minutes or an hour or half an hour, depending on what it is they're watching. It's escapism, right? But it's an escape to a fictitious land, an illusory world. It's just more illusion, see? And that's not going to solve our problems. Not until they talk about these things honestly on TV or in the movies. No, everything is subliminal. TV is so subliminal to cause people to act automatically without giving a second thought to what they're doing. There are stories of 90-year-old ladies that watch the shopping channels, and they load their spare bedrooms of their house and their basements and pantries and their garages with stuff, junk that they don't need. They paid for this stuff. They don't have much money in the bank. They've paid for all these things that somebody said, you got to have this. This is a great deal. Get it now. And these things were never even opened when they arrived at the person's house. That's how drastic the mind control is, and the power of suggestion. Take that same ability to affect an individual and allow that individual to be who they were created to be, and imagine what would happen if you reverse that negative process.
Are you asking me if I can do that, or?
No, I'm saying we can do that, but I'm saying that's what we should be doing.
Oh, of course. But, you know, if you're too tied up at the end of your day to exert yourself, and you'd just rather watch a bunch of overly excited individuals running around kicking a football, then it's difficult to achieve very much from that.
Or blowing up buildings or killing other people or whatever, you know. These images are brought to us as replacements for action, for experience, for the real thing, you see? I'm not saying people should go out and be killing. That's not what I'm saying at all. But to continue, name a movie where somebody didn't get killed. Do that, you know, or somebody didn't die. Why do we have to be presented with images of people being killed? People dying of disease and suffering. Well, it teaches the subconscious to accept that as normal. But the only thing that's normal about it is that's all you get. That's the agenda. So you're getting the agenda, and that's to dumb you down and desensitize you and keep you in a constant state of fear. Where is their progress in that? Where is their invention? Where is their creativity? It's very easy to see what they're doing. We've talked about this countless times. They're caught stealing trillions of dollars, and they bail themselves out and make us pay for it, or at least imply that we have to pay for it. There's an awakening coming in that regard. That they're going to be held accountable, you know. Go ahead, Jim.
Yeah, I was going to say, I hope there's an awakening coming, because it's been that way far too long. And it's very hard for me to believe that the people are just indefinitely going to accept that kind of abuse. Sooner or later, something's going to snap.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
Rather than later.
While I was talking, my email box, my inbox, received a message from a doctor that is obviously selling product, but he's bringing information out about healthy foods and things that will keep us healthy. But this is an advertisement, okay? And I got another email again about a sale. You know, it's just nonstop bombardment. That doesn't interest me. When there's something that I require for the work that I do, I will get it. I don't need someone to tell me I have to get it now or I have to get it by a certain time. You know, if they make it and I've determined that it's going to be a part of what I do, I will get it on my own. That's how I react to the advertising. Now, you take a story, you take a situation that's going on in the world, and you put out a message of urgency, or you put out a false message about it. People react to that the same way they react to all these advertisements and these commercials. And it's in, if it's not in print form, it's in audio form. If it's not in audio, it's in video, photographs. It's just sensory bombardment, and really it's a very low frequency. There's no heart in this. This is the corporations wanting to put their hand in your pocket. That's all this is. This is an invasion of your privacy. It's an invasion of your sanctity. It's an invasion of your true nature. Just designed, very symbolic. You know, the symbols are there, the numbers are there, the dollar signs are there, the dates are there. All the colors and the excitement and the exclamation points and the huge fonts. And, you know, even they use this statement, never was there a better time to save money than now. Get it now while you can. Okay, that's the gist of most sales.
Yeah, and I've always found that that's exceptionally paradoxical, because if you really want to save money, you don't buy the blessed thing.
Yeah, you don't spend the money and save it. Now, that comes from a misunderstanding or no understanding whatsoever about what money really is, you see. So we forgive the bankers for being corrupt. Now, do we allow them to remain corrupt, or do we go into understanding why they are corrupt and understanding how to stop them from being corrupt? You know, eliminating corruption then becomes the goal, you see? And you have to deal with the truth. You can't deal with the way they present it to you. There's nothing about forgiveness in their approach, in their methodologies, nothing about appreciation, nothing about humility or valor, other than they have the audacity or the gall to do some of the crimes they do and perpetrate on humanity. They don't have compassion, and their understanding is their secrets. Not anything to be shared with anything, with anyone. It's to be imposed upon them. So we need to start seeing things the way they really are. And taking action.
Amen to that.
Now, in your experience, Jim, your personal experience, you say, well, you see this, These virtues, these six sacred virtues, are in operation naturally in your life. Do you see this in the mainstream scientific community?
Well, I imagine you see it sometimes, but I think for the most part, the companies that are organized to literally process inventing, it's impossible for it to manifest there. It just is, in my opinion. Because that's sort of like saying to Leonardo da Vinci or Michelangelo, the Sistine Chapel is ready for painting. I want it done today. You know, it doesn't work. It's just not going to happen under those kind of conditions. And it's the greed and the love of the almighty dollar that prevents people from realizing and allowing for the natural creative process. These people who are driven by money and greed, they have the only creativity they may have in their life are figuring out the schemes to separate you from your money.
Yeah,
but
it keeps
the true creativity that is always accompanied by beauty and a natural feeling of accomplishment and gratitude for being allowed to glimpse information from a higher plane. All of those things are totally missing in their form of the creative experience because they're using the brain stem, the reptilian part of their brain, to scheme. You know, that's like an iguana that's hunting for his lunch. He's gonna figure out a way to eat that toad or that pigeon or whatever he's after. And that's the basic survival function that motivates them. A human being is allowed to have that. He shouldn't make it the overwhelming drive that animates his actions and explains his existence. And that's exactly what these people do.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree. Well, Jim, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for engaging in this discourse tonight. I think we can come back to this on a future show. Again, I'm going to repeat those six principles for the listening audience. Appreciation, forgiveness, understanding, compassion, valor, and humility. And not necessarily in any particular order. Some people are very good at appreciating everything they come into contact with, or forgiving. And this is an action of the heart. It's not in the mind. So remember that. And I encourage anyone, go to the Windmakers website. You go to my website, directlightproductions.com, click on links. It's right near the top of the page on the right side, the link to the Windmakers website. A lot of interesting art. There's some interesting papers written there, even some music that you can listen to. It's worth listening to. It's worth looking at. It's worth contemplating this. And it's going to take you outside the box. That's the purpose of the site. It's not a Hollywood production. It's quite simple, and it's outside the box, and it's very mind-expanding in a way. And it's going to shatter your belief systems. I'm hearing a lot of people now acknowledge the impact that a belief system has on shackling people and keeping them from doing what they would do if they realized that they have an innate and a God-given gift to be sovereign and to be free and to express that all the time in their lives. Jim, I want to thank you for being on the show tonight.
Well, thank you for having me, Don. I hope I made some kind of worthwhile contribution, and I look forward to being back with you next week.
Yes, you contributed, as usual. You did a great job. And likewise. So you have a great weekend. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. And tonight's guest, scientist, inventor, Jim Murray. Special thanks to Wind Talkers Radio Network and at BBS Radio, Seth Hendrick and Don Newsom on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, and most of all, you, the listening audience, for tuning in. Join me next Monday when my special guest will be Dr. H. Huat. In the meantime, have a great weekend, and I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.